the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting you today, again, live from Dallas, Texas, here in the studio KCBI at the Criswell College. We're very thankful for a place to make this broadcast, as in Louisville, the storm damage there has knocked us off of our normal means of reaching you and the airwaves. So we very much appreciate the hospitality of KCBI. And speaking of storm damage, what we had in Louisville was very small compared to Jackson, Tennessee. Yesterday, we considered what had happened at Union University. Remarkable story there, as a great deal of that campus of a leading Christian university has been destroyed, and yet an incredible opportunity for Christian witness, as you have seen President David Dockery, students and faculty and others, so much in the news. And some of that news coverage has been really, really compelling. This is what Union University student Matt Taylor had to say. He had been trapped in one of the dorms.
The door was open, and I was just like, well, it's going to get wet. I'm going to go close it. But when I got to the door, I realized I couldn't get away from the door because I was being sucked out of it.
Well, that's just kind of the scary story that strikes fear in every parent's heart as you imagine your own children in a dormitory where you think they're safe and this kind of thing can happen. And the university did all the right things. The students had policies to follow. But in the end, this kind of storm just packed such a punch. There is no safe place. And yet, what a remarkable thing when you look at the damage on that campus to reflect upon the fact that not one of those young lives was lost. That's an enormous cause for our thanksgiving. President David Dockery at Union University has been taking the real scale of what's going on that campus, and the estimates right now of damage are upwards of $40 million. This is part of what he's had to say.
That's the only building that was not touched. Every other building on campus is damaged in some form.
He was speaking there of the athletic facility. It's interesting that in a school of higher education, somehow it's the athletic facility that got spared, but that just means that they're going to have to redouble their effort to try to do everything to get that school back on its feet, and they'll do it. I know Dr. Dockery so well. I know faculty and staff and students of that school. They will be pulling together to make it happen. Other events in the news, of course, include in the aftermath of Super Tuesday's vote with 24 states, the fact that now former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney has dropped out of the Republican race. And we won't be looking particularly at what the former governor had to say. It's just a recognition of the fact that he was disappointed after losing 14 of the races he'd hoped to do far better in on Tuesday night. Looking at that, that leaves us in a very interesting position as you look at the Republican nomination race. It's pretty obvious at this point that Arizona Senator John McCain is now the nominee's presumptive of the Republican Party. And it was in that light that he went to the CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Committee, convention with 6,000 assembled today in order to make what had to be a very significant speech. Listen to a little bit of what he had to say.
We have had a few disagreements, and none of us will pretend that we won't continue to have a few. But even in disagreement, especially in disagreement, I will seek the counsel of my fellow conservatives.
Well, very interesting statement. In the course of that address to a very conservative group, the Arizona senator got a great deal of support, standing ovations. It's clear that the momentum is in his sails. It's very clear that he assumes he is now the nominee, and the party is likely to coalesce around him. But at the same time, he raised some issues that did not draw such an affirmative response from the crowd, one of them especially having to do with illegal immigration, and yet he has promised he will try to unify the party. This also in the aftermath of the fact that several prominent conservatives have said they would not support him. Most notably of these focus on the family founder and chairman, Dr. James Dobson, making a statement on Tuesday that he would not vote for John McCain under any circumstances. That's actually a repeat of a statement he'd made as a private individual some time back. A great deal of conversation about that as well. Rod Dreher is columnist for the Dallas Morning News. He's my guest here in the studio today. We're going to be talking about some other things later, but the magnitude of this story really is something to reflect upon. He's also a former senior editor of National Review magazine. Has a keen observation on contemporary events, culture, and politics. Rod, what do you make of this?
Well, it's clearly huge for the Republican Party. This is an opportunity for the Republican Party to come together and end this thing now. if they can get behind McCain, if Huckabee will stand down, they'll make some kind of deal. The Republican ticket can rest. They can reconcile and raise money while the Democrats continue to bleed themselves out all the way to their convention. The key question now is, what's Mike Huckabee going to do?
Well, it is a key question, and one that we can kind of prognosticate about here. But one of the things I would note is that the former Arkansas governor has pointedly not run against John McCain in the primaries thus far. He has really avoided any direct confrontation with him in the debates going all the way back before Iowa. And so let me just ask you straightforwardly, do you think there is the likelihood of a McCain-Huckabee ticket?
I think it's got to be considered as a strong possibility, because Huckabee was the third biggest vote getter in the Republican primary. He won big in the South the other night on Super Tuesday. And if he were to come in with McCain, he could bring in a lot of evangelicals and social conservatives. On the other hand, a lot of Republicans, Rush Limbaugh first among them, their head would explode. So it would be a potential for alienating a lot of the base. But at the same time, what choice do the conservatives have? If I were Huckabee, though, I tell you what, I'd be praying for Hillary Clinton's success right now.
Well, let me just point out that for many of us who care deeply about issues related to life and family, John McCain is just really an awkward candidate. I mean, this is a man who really was very much a part of the Gang of 14 that had to do with judicial nominations. This is a man who has been for human embryonic stem cell research, or at least against federal restrictions on funding. This is a man who voted against the federal marriage amendment, saying it was on Federalist grounds, but nonetheless, and has at least at times expressed that he has no particular concern with the issue of gay marriage. He retracted that statement, but had made it rather forcefully before. How do you take the measure of all that, Rod?
Well, I think that's why a Huckabee on his ticket would be very helpful to him. One thing that it really got to me about during this whole debate earlier was when Senator Rick Santorum said that McCain may be right technically on a lot of issues that are important to us cultural and social conservatives, but when it got down to it, he wasn't there pushing for it, and the gay marriage amendment was a key issue. I think if he puts Huckabee on there, he could placate a lot of cultural conservatives, but he runs a big risk too, because Huckabee is toxic to a lot of the Republican establishment.
Well, and the other issue is that McCain's supposed advantage for the Republican ticket is that he can draw a large number of independents from the middle. Does adding Huckabee detract from that?
It depends on whether Huckabee can make more of his so-called populist appeal and downplay the religious right aspect of his candidacy. I'm on the editorial board at the Dallas Morning News. It is a socially liberal editorial board, even though I'm a social conservative. And when Mike Huckabee came to talk to us in about a year ago, I thought that, oh, my goodness, you know, my colleagues are not going to like him one bit. He's a Southern Baptist preacher. Well, I got to tell you, Huckabee completely charmed them, and he ended up winning the endorsement in the Republican primary of the Dallas Morning News editorial board because they saw his heart, they liked his more liberal economic views, and they didn't mind the fact that he was a religious conservative. It stunned me, and I think that it shows the potential for Huckabee's appeal across lines if he can get the right media coverage. And I think right now the media has, for so long, pigeonholed him as only the evangelical candidate. I think there's a lot more to him than that, but it just depends on how the media plays it.
I'm here in Dallas, Texas with you. In fact, we're here having this conversation in the city, which is your home. A lot of people would think that Dallas would be a very conservative city, is it?
You know, it's complicated. When I moved here from New York City a few years ago, I thought I was going straight to America's Bavaria, you know, the conservative heartland. But Dallas County is changing rapidly, Al. Illegal immigration is making it a Democratic city. Many of our city offices are now held by the Democrats, and that's just something that turned in the past few years. The conservatives are moving out to the northern suburbs. But Texas is becoming a more Democratic state as the Latino population rises. And I think by 2020, it's going to be an absolute majority of Latinos here. And so the future looks very, very bright for the Democratic Party in Texas.
And you're talking statewide, not just here in the metroplex of Dallas-Fort Worth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely statewide. I mean, look, Dallas is the only city in the country, to my knowledge, that has a lesbian Latina sheriff, Sheriff Lupe Valdez, who got elected a few years ago. So we have a very big gay and lesbian community here. The largest gay church in the world is right here in Dallas, Texas. A lot of people don't realize that.
No, as a matter of fact, that's why I thought it would be an interesting question for us to discuss here in this segment as we're thinking about this, because there are an awful lot of people who have a conception about red states and blue states without the recognition that, especially when you look at the metropolitan areas, especially where in some of those very red states, you look at some of the university towns, you're looking at a very different picture. And that kind of political and cultural change can come rather quickly because it's not only geographic, it's generational. As you start looking at younger and younger generations, you get a very different profile. And, well, that'll be good fodder for our conversation when we come back in just a moment. My guest is Rod Dreher, who is a member of the editorial board of the Dallas Morning News and a columnist for the paper, former senior editor for National Review Magazine. We're going to be talking about, well, the issue of culture and politics and the issue of morality and economics. It's something we all need to consider, and Rod Dreher has given it a great deal of thought. So will you when we come back on the Albert Miller Program.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program, broadcasting to you live today from Dallas, Texas, here in the studios of KCBI. To join the conversation today, do not call our normal numbers. Instead, the number just for today is 800-881-9270. That's 800-881-9270. My guest today in the studio is Rod Dreher, who is columnist and member of the editorial board of the Dallas Morning News. He is also a former senior editor for National Review, a native of Baton Rouge, Louisiana. He is now here in Dallas, Texas, with his wife and two boys, and raising a family as well as doing these other things. One of the things I appreciate about Rod Dreher is that he is very reflective about not only the issues of politics, but also the larger issues of culture. Rod, I was trying to explain something to a group of people who are more liberal the other day, and I was talking to them, and I said, here's the problem. I said, you don't understand that I believe that the culture produces the politics. The politics can't produce the culture. And I said, you genuinely believe that politics is going to change this? I said, and there's some conservatives or people who think they're conservatives, maybe rightly called neoconservatives, who believe that the politics can determine the culture. You talk in your philosophy or approach called crunchy conservatism about many of these same things. You really do believe that the culture does produce the politics.
I do. And, you know, you make me think, Al. A couple of years ago, I was at a dinner here in Dallas at Spence Publishing, a good conservative publishing house. They were having their 10th anniversary dinner, and they had a lot of their authors, good conservative authors, there giving a little talk after the dinner. And Phyllis Schlafly was there, and someone asked, what should we do? What should we conservatives do? I think this was after the 2006 losses. And she pounded the table and said, we got to fight for the judiciary. We got to fight the public schools, and on and on. And as I listened to the different authors talk, I thought, you know, this is not it. We on the right have placed so much emphasis on changing politics, on getting the churches involved in politics, and churches should be to a certain extent, but we have missed out on the culture-forming institutions in society, and not just church, but schools and different institutions that produce a real Christian and a truly conservative worldview, and I think we place way too much emphasis on politics.
Yeah, well, let's explain what we're really talking about here. The conservative conceit is really something borrowed from the liberal conceit, which is the fact that if you can get control of the laws and you can get control of the political structure, you can really change the culture in a way you want it. And this was certainly something that drove liberalism as a post-war philosophy, looking at the civil rights movement, looking at so many other things. If we can just make prejudice illegal, we can eventually change the hearts of people. Well, it turned out that just changing the law to a non-discrimination law, the Voting Rights Act and all the rest, didn't exactly change hearts and minds. It became rather, looking at it in retrospect, probably a reflection of the fact that the hearts and minds were changing. Perhaps not in all places, but in enough to make it politically sustainable. In other words, what I'm arguing is, and this is an argument you yourself have made, is that the culture produces the politics. The laws are a reflection of the culture, that you really can't, by political action, fundamentally change the culture.
Well, and this is why I think that we on the right have lost the gay marriage debate. I hate to say it, but when the Federal Marriage Amendment went down in 2005, it's over. And it's over because we heterosexuals have devalued marriage by embracing divorce just at such an enormous rate, and Christians divorce at the same rate as anybody else. And we have divorced sex from the sacred commitment. And I think it's the gay marriage proponents just say they're just asking for what mainstream society already takes as its own right. And I think it's very difficult to make the argument to young people, even young Christians, about why traditional marriage is sacred when it has been so divorced from sacred commitment in the culture.
I have had the opportunity to meet you just today, although I've appreciated you from afar. And, when you find someone that's saying some of the things that you believe are important, you always are drawn to their ideas. I'm going to ask you a straightforward question. Now, my radio audience knows exactly where I stand on this, but let me just ask you this. Can you have a healthy culture? Can you have a healthy economy? Can you have a healthy politics? Can you have a healthy entertainment industry? Can you have a healthy reality for the culture at large if you do not have healthy families?
No, you absolutely cannot. We were talking during the break about a book that came out in 1947 that's just been reissued by ISI called Family and Civilization by Harvard sociologist Carl Zimmerman. And he talks about how you look back in history and the kind of families, the structure of the family that all the great civilizations have determined the survival of those civilizations. Look at Greece, look at Rome. Before they fell, they had atomistic families, a nuclear family that was divorced from the broader family structure. And ultimately they fell because the individual became the most important unit of society, and they stopped producing children. We are at that point right now.
Well, we are at that point. We're at that point to the extent that the idea of personal autonomy is the great theme of American culture. It's driven in our advertising. It's certainly the focus of so much educational theory. It's written into our politics. The sole individual as a consumer, an observer of entertainment, as a political unit, it's all about me.
It's all about me, and you know what? The conservatives and the liberals in the mainstream have both accepted that. Whenever you see even conservative candidates talking, making their appeals, they talk about terms of freedom and individual rights. Well, I'm in favor of individual rights, too, but ultimately we've got to think about society. And people have got to start thinking that they're remembering and rediscovering the truth that there is something greater than the individual. And I think that in many ways, contemporary conservatism is the flip side of contemporary liberalism in terms of exalting the individual. Conservatives are more quick to point out about the importance of traditional sexual morality. Liberals focus on economics. But in the end, they're both liberal in a philosophical sense, in that they do value the individual above all.
Let's take a call from Micah calling from Athens, Georgia. Go ahead, Micah. What do you think?
I just wanted to say just really quickly that I think that, you know, the price that we have to pay if we want to affect real lasting change in the political landscape is personal holiness. And are we willing to live lives of personal holiness so that the church can be what the church should be, and then spread that change to the larger nation, you know, and the world as well?
Well, Mike, I want to affirm that, and I want to affirm it in terms of a public holiness that is seen in maintaining the kind of commitments we're talking about here with marriage. I mean, one of the most important ways we can witness to the truth of God, one of the most important ways we can witness to the truth of the gospel is to stay married to our wives, for instance. To understand that, just to take marriage as an example, it's so important that it's found in Genesis 2. It's so important that it becomes the metaphor for the relationship between Christ and the church. It's so important that kind of fidelity becomes the kind of covenant fidelity that's supposed to point to God's own covenant fidelity to us. And so, yes, I'm going to say personal holiness is absolutely necessary. It's certainly, from a Christian perspective, fundamental to our discipleship. But it's also a public issue.
Well, personal holiness is not only a matter of what you do in your own family. It's what you do in your church and your community. When I was researching my book, Crunchy Cons, I talked to a Presbyterian woman in Arizona who said, you know, I'm living in the most conservative community I've ever lived in, and all the people around me are good Christians, but they don't live any different in terms of consumerism than the rest of the world. There's a problem.
Yeah, there's clearly a problem, and few are the places to talk about it because there are an awful lot of conservatives who have confused what's called conservatism in the popular culture for what really conserves the things that matter to us.
Precisely.
And we'll sell those institutions and commitments out without realizing it's an empty bag on the other side. Give us a call at 800-881-9270. Back from Dallas, Texas in just a moment. You're listening coast to coast to the Albert Mueller Program.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, folks, I never thought I'd have to say this on the air, but ignore those phone numbers given to you, because under the extraordinary circumstances with technical problems, we have to have a different phone number today. It's 800-881-9270, 800-881-9270. My guest here in the studio is Rod Dreher, columnist and member of the editorial board of the Dallas Morning News and author of Crunchy Conservatism, Crunchy Cons. What were you talking about, for the rest of the program is what got us here to this point, and that's how we understand a conservatism that, isn't as conservative as it thinks it is. Rod, what are you seeing out there?
You know, Al, here in North Texas, Collin County, that's the northern county just north of Dallas. It's one of the most prosperous counties in the United States in terms of income. It is the most Republican county in all of Texas, which tells you how conservative it is. And yet 2 or 3 years ago, my own newspaper, the Dallas Morning News, did a study of Collin County and found an unusually high divorce rate there and an unusually high level of personal bankruptcy. We talked to pastors in the community who were saying over and over again they were seeing families being destroyed by personal indebtedness of that the families have gotten into, because everybody's trying to keep up with the Joneses. And this was all before the recent home mortgage crisis. So I got to ask myself, what kind of conservatives are these who out there who are so desperate to buy the latest granite tabletop and the big McMansion and the Cadillac Escalade that they're going into great personal debt, sacrificing their future, and in some cases sacrificing their families? That's not conservative.
No, in other words, a true conservative would be asking the question, how do I preserve my family? How do I preserve this institution? How do I preserve these commitments? How do I preserve my time with my children? How do I preserve my children in the midst of a consumer culture to protect them from all of this? I mean, this really gets back to the kind of vision that made conservatism conservative. And, the labels just really get messed up. But looking back at a Russell Kirk or an Edmund Burke and looking back to a conservatism that understood that the word is supposed to mean conserving the things that are most valuable, not necessarily right wing.
Exactly. And a conservatism that cannot conserve the family, that doesn't put the family first, even above the interest of big business, is not a conservatism worthy of our support. And I think that's something that's very difficult to say on the right, because as soon as you start criticizing big business, then people start saying, well, you must be some sort of Marxist. No, I'm for the family. The family comes first. And if big business doesn't like that, well, let's push big business back. I think big business and big government can be equally dangerous to the family, and that's something that you don't hear a lot on the right.
And I totally agree with that. But to be intellectually honest, I just also have to say that it's very difficult to imagine how to undo this. I mean, there's a sense in which it just looks like an inexorable process whereby businesses get bigger and bigger, globalization leads to bigger global business networks and consortia, and eventually, at the stage after World War II, the family was really harmed by the fact of social mobility, moving people from one part of the country to another, separating extended family. It just looks like that's going to get worse.
I think so, but I think the only way it's going to get better is when individual families and families in networks and churches decide to take a stand against it. And my family, we have stopped watching television. We tried to do our very best to patronize local merchants, and we get our meat, most of our meat, from some Christian farmers who farm organically in the neighborhood, actually, about 40 miles out of Dallas, because we know that our money, our consumer dollar, goes to support those farm families, those Christian farm families. And I think we have the opportunity as conservatives, as Christians, to put our money where our values are and to make the choices we can in every possible way to support the community. You can't do it all the time, but when you can, make those choices.
Yeah, I think preserving the institutions was really important. And for Christians, you're talking about the family and church preeminently. In terms of understanding that the church also can be a part of the problem rather than a part of the solution, when the church considers itself conservative in the wrong way, without recognizing that if it doesn't hold people accountable to their marriages, if it doesn't hold people accountable to their covenant commitments, if it doesn't hold parents accountable for raising their children in the nurture and admonition of the Lord, it is anything but a conservative institution.
Absolutely true. And one more thing, that we have to have people doing this together, raising their kids together. Michael Medved told me when I first got ready to have children, me and my wife, he said, don't think you and your wife can do it together. You've got to have other committed Christians who can help you out.
And support, just absolutely, in terms of understanding that we have to live as something of an adversary culture in the midst of the dominant consumer culture here.
If you're not countercultural, you're not truly conservative and not truly Christian.
Now, that's something that a lot of conservatives never think about. I want to refer you to Rod Dreher's book. Rod, tell them where they can find it.
Crunchy Cons. You can find it on Amazon.com and in your bookstores.
All right. My guest today has been Rod Dreher, the Dallas Morning News. Back with more conversation about this and your phone calls. The number 800-881-9270. 800-881-9270. From Dallas, Texas, I'm Albert Mohler.
The Superior Gold Group, a precious metals firm, is proud to sponsor the Albert Mohler Program. You can get more information about buying gold at 866-432-8656.
Well, we've talked about a range of issues today. It was good to have Rod Dreher on the program, and hopefully it may lead some of us to think about what it really means to be conservative, in the right sense of the word. I mean, there's no way in the Bible that says you're supposed to be conservative. It's rather that the things we're concerned about from a scriptural worldview having to do with family, marriage, and all the rest, these days is categorized that way in terms of a major political and cultural philosophy. And so we've got to think about what these words mean. And I really appreciated Rod's concern, which is very well placed, that what's good for the economy is not necessarily good for the family, at least in terms of how some people consider the economy and make economic choices. He's a very, very interesting person. His book, Crunchy Cons, is also very interesting, and we'll look forward to having him on this program for further conversation. In order to join the conversation, call 800-881-9270. That's 800-881-9270. Let's go to Andrew, calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Andrew, what do you think?
Dr. Mohler, I grew up in Utah, which is, I believe, the only state where Bill Clinton finished third, so to give you a sense of how conservative it is, but a state that I also understand leads the country in bankruptcy. I've been thinking a lot about this, and particularly in this political season, that I think there's two things that we might want to consider. One is that differences between Republicans and Democrats are a difference in degree and not in principle, and that as conservatives, we need to be voting really for those people who most represent what we believe in. And maybe it's the time for the rise of a third party that truly is conservative.
Yeah, you know, it's very interesting you raise that. That is the persistent conversation on both sides of the political divide every time there is a political disappointment, because then it brings us to the reality, Andrew, of realizing that a political party really can't deliver often what people assume that it can. Or maybe I should say that in a fallen world it won't, because one of the things I try to hit again and again on this program is that we should assume in a Genesis 3 fallen world that political parties will do whatever is perceived to be in the party's best interest. Andrew, as you well know, in the Republican Party, you're really dealing with three different constituencies. You're dealing with big business and corporate interests. They want small government, low taxation, low government interference in the economy, et cetera. Then you've got Christian conservatives, evangelicals, a large percentage of the Republican vote. But then you also have a socially conservative group that is not, I think, so conservative as people think it is, and that's the libertarian group. So you put together the libertarian impulse, which, by the way, is shown enormous support for a candidate like Ron Paul in this election. Then you put together the corporate interests and the conservative Christians, and you've got some incompatibility there. I mean, some candidates like Ronald Reagan were able to bridge the divide and unite all parts of the party. To some extent, George W. Bush did the same, but, you know, there is no doubt that John McCain's going to have a much harder time doing that. And he has managed to anger, I guess, just about all three of those major constituencies one time or another. Andrew raises the question about voting, and I really appreciate the way he opened the comment by talking about Utah. I mean, it does say something. You would count Utah as a conservative state. But just taking his statement there at face value about leading the country in bankruptcy, there's something deeply not conservative about that. There's something deeply indicative of a problem in that culture that has to do with consumerism and all the rest if it leads that way. which is one of the reasons why liberals often point their fingers at conservatives and say, look at the states where you have greatest influence. Look at the Bible Belt. Look at all those red states down in the South, and then look at the divorce rates, and you will see that rather than having fewer divorces, you have more. Now, I know somebody's going to call and say, yeah, that's because conservatives marry more. Well, that is cohabitate less, but regardless of the fact, the divorce culture is an absolute scandal. Now, taking Andrew's last statement, he reminded us that we need to vote on conviction, and that's true. That's true. And that that analysis of conviction always comes in a political context. I mean, I think most of the people right now who are absolutely concerned about John McCain, and I'm one of them, would, under some circumstances, have less concern simply because of who might be nominated on the other side. And, of course, so you're looking at what, by any measure, is going to be a fascinating election this time, because when you put Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama at the top of the ticket on the Democratic side, and you put John McCain at the top of the ticket on the Republican side, you're inevitably going to have a rethinking on the Republican side of what exactly we expect out of an election, what we expect out of a president, what we expect out of a party, and what we expect out of the collision of these worldviews. Because there are an awful lot of people who are wondering, what's the fundamental difference? And a presidential campaign inevitably produces a pretty strong spotlight on what those differences are, if the differences do exist. We'll be watching that together. Appreciate the callers today. Both Micah and Andrew will be receiving a free copy of my book, Culture Shift, and both of you be sure to get your information to us so that we can get that to you. Both of you should simply write us at our website at albertmoeller.com and remind us that you were callers today. That's Micah and Andrew. Normally, we're able to do this through our call screening studio there in Louisville, Kentucky, but the storms that hit, bringing such devastation on Tuesday night to some parts of the country, and including about 54 deaths, did bring just a little bit of trouble for us in that it has knocked us out in terms of production ability there in Louisville. We'll be back up, and I'll be back broadcasting from Louisville again next week. But right now, I again want to express appreciation to KCBI and the studio here, Jerry Johnson Live, here at the Criswell College, for being so gracious to us, Larry Williams, the producer and engineer as well. This is one of those times when you realize it takes an awful lot to get a program like this up nationwide, and I'm very grateful for the conversation we had today. Just think about this. Where else in the world today would you have people considering some of the things we talked about today? Talking about what it truly means to be a conservative, if conservatism is really about conserving the things that matter. Recognizing that right-wing and conservative are not the same thing. That, indeed, there are some right-wing causes that would be as injurious to family and to the cause of preserving the ties that should bind us, the institutions that are important to civilization, as might be some left-wing ideas. That's why we as Christians, we got to keep our eyes open. We have to be thinking. That's why this is the place for intelligent Christian conversation. You know, it might be true that we can raise more issues than we can answer. I mean, that's certainly always the case for anything that's important. Almost every significant conversation is one that has to continue, and that's why we're back day after day. Always feel free to write us. Just go to albertmoeller.com, hit the mail button, it'll get to us, or write us at mail@albertmoeller.com. Today from Dallas, Texas, it was interesting to get this perspective on what's going on here. It's also good to have had Rod Dreher as our guest. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment on the Albert Moeller Program. Welcome back to the Albert Moeller Program. In the conversation earlier with Rod Dreher, we talked about the issue of the homosexual normalization in the society. And he made the point again that we lost that largely. And I think he's largely right, simply because conservatives really weren't showing what conservatism is all about, and it got confused with something else. And if we do not make very clear that we support marriage, not just because we think it's a convenient institution, but because we believe that it is an honorable pledge made to God and before God as the institution of marriage is solemnized, then, we reap what we sow. Let me just give you some evidence. New York Times, just this week, the New York Appellate Court ruled Friday of last week that valid out-of-state marriages of same-sex couples must be legally recognized in New York. That's barely a stepping stone from the legalization of same-sex marriage in that state. The New York Times, celebrating this, said that the decision is at once commonsensical and profound. It goes on to say it was common sense because it simply accorded same-sex marriages the same legal status as other marriages. It was profound because of the way it could transform the lives of gay people. In other words, it is tantamount to the court declaring that it will legalize same-sex marriage. In Maryland, the General Assembly has had introduced legislation that would abolish civil marriage ceremonies and replace them with domestic partnerships for all couples, heterosexual, homosexual. Of course, here again, let's just point out the fiction when it says all couples. It does mean at least two, but it gives no ground for why only two, if indeed you're going to change marriage from being heterosexual to include also homosexuals. The California Supreme Court, again, just this week, scheduled a March 4 hearing for a long-awaited clash between gay rights advocates, the state, and religious groups over the constitutionality of banning same-sex marriage. This is a challenge to California's law that defines marriage as the union of a man and a woman, passed by the legislature in 1977 and reaffirmed by voters in a 2000, that's year 2000, ballot measure. All that showing where the issue is simply getting away from us by action in legislatures and courts. One very interesting thing does come on the line, and that is that there is a proposed constitutional amendment banning same-sex marriage, which just barely, and at the last minute, qualified for the November ballot in Florida. And as various news media are reporting, this is a development that could affect the fall's presidential election there. Of course, could affect it either way. That's the kind of America we're living in right now. It'll be fascinating to watch that as we move along. Let's remember about the conversation with Rod Dreher. Let's remember about deeper thinking, more careful, critical thinking necessary to understand what it would truly mean to conserve the things that matter most to us. And speaking of our human lives as Christians, in this age, it's hard to see without marriage and family how we have any meaningful civilization or how we maintain our commitments to one another. The church may be the last people on earth to remember that. Back again tomorrow for Intelligent Christian Conversation. This is the Albert Mueller Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmueller.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmueller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.